Hello everybody, it's me, Mr. Tall 23, back in the video. Just going to do a quick sound check real quick. Alright, so the sound is working. So, in this video, I want to talk about the end times one world religion, which we slowly see being established right now at this moment in time, as we head closer to the last days, and which will come into full force in the midst of Daniel's 70th week, when the abomination of desolation is set up in the temple in Jerusalem, and the beast declares himself to be a god. And this is going to happen eventually. The scriptures tell us that all people on earth who are not saved will worship this man of sin. Even just a few hundred years ago, these prophecies seem kind of inconceivable. Since there are people, people were a lot more separated back in the day. But nowadays, we see it coming into fruition with the modern ecumenical movement and a desire of different religious leaders to unite together. There have already been a lot of religious movements and religions which are antichrist in nature, which I'll talk about a bit in this video. But I want to read first from Revelation 13, where the description of the beast is given. It says in Revelation chapter 13, verse 1 to 8, "And I stood upon the sand of the sea and saw a beast rise up out of the sea, having seven heads and ten horns, and upon his horns ten crowns, and upon his heads the name of blasphemy. And the beast which I saw was like unto a leopard, and his feet were as the feet of a bear, and his mouth as the mouth of a lion, and the dragon gave him his power and his seat and great authority. And I saw one of his heads as it were wounded to death, and his deadly wound was healed. And all the world wondered after the beast. And they worshipped the dragon, which gave power unto the beast. And they worshipped the beast, saying, Who is like unto the beast? Who is able to make war with him? And there was given unto him a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies. And power was given unto him to continue 42 months. And he opened his mouth in blasphemy against God, to blaspheme his name and his tabernacle and them that dwell in heaven. And it was given unto him to make war with the saints and to overcome them. And power was given him over all kindreds and tongues and nations. And all that dwell upon the earth shall worship him, whose names were not written in the book of life of the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world." So this beast, if you notice, in verse 2, it says that it has the characteristics of the four beasts mentioned in Daniel 7, which would be a leopard, a bear, and a lion. It's in the reverse order, though. In the book of Daniel chapter 7, it has the lion, which represents Babylon, then the bear representing the Medes and the Persians, and then the leopard representing the Greeks. And this final beast, the Antichrist, has all three of these characteristics. But he's also given power by the dragon, which we know to be Satan from the last chapter, Revelation 12. So it's Satan who gives authority and power unto the beast and establishes him upon his throne. And that's also explained by 2 Thessalonians 2, which we'll come back to later, which says that his coming is after the working of Satan. Now, through Satan, the Antichrist is given his great authority. So it's not somebody who establishes himself by his own power. Notice in verse 3 that it says that the heads of the beast is shown to be wounded to death and is healed. And as a result of this, the world wonders after the beast. Now, I don't want to go into great detail about my interpretation of who the beast is, but the scriptures do tell us that the beast ascends out of the bottomless pit in Revelation 11. And in Revelation 17, it also says, "The beast that thou sawest was and is not and shall ascend out of the bottomless pit." So the beast was alive, but is dead and ascends out of hell, presumably by the working of Satan, as the Bible says. Now, this is the reason why the whole world wonders after him and worships him, because he would be the only person to ascend out of hell. Remember, this same figure is called the Antichrist elsewhere in the Bible, specifically in 1 John 2. And the word Antichrist just means in place of Christ. So this man is going to imitate Christ and establish himself in the place of Christ through the working of Satan. And not only will all the world worship the beast, but it says that they will also worship the dragon. So we can call the religion of the Antichrist really pure Satanism, that the world turns to devil worship and the worship of a man who opposes and exalts himself above all that is called God. He's not just saying he's equal with God. He's saying that he's above God. In verse 6, it tells us that the beast will blaspheme the true God and all that is in heaven, showing the pride in exalting himself. Although we know, of course, in Revelation 19, when Jesus returns on the white horse, that he's going to destroy the beast and the false prophet immediately and cast them into the lake of fire. In verses 7 and 8 of this chapter, Revelation 13, it says that he will make war against believers while all the unbelievers will bow down to and worship the beast. Now, that alone is quite frightening to think about from an earthly standpoint, to know that one day there will be a single man who's given control of all nations and kindreds and tongues and peoples, and that every person on earth, except for Christians, true Christians, people who are saved, people who put their full trust on Jesus Christ, everybody else will worship him. And those who don't worship him, so the true Christians, people who are saved, will be killed. There will be a war against them. But we have more details about the worship of this beast in particular in some of the following verses. I want to read from verse 11 to verse 17. It says, "And I beheld another beast coming up out of the earth, and he had two horns like a lamb, and he spake as a dragon, and he exerciseth all the power of the first beast before him, and causeth the earth and them which dwell therein to worship the first beast, whose deadly wound was healed. And he doeth great wonders, so that he maketh fire come down from heaven on the earth in the sight of men, and deceiveth them that dwell on the earth by the means of those miracles which he had power to do in the sight of the beast, saying to them that dwell on the earth, that they should make an image to the beast, which had the wound by a sword, and did live. And he had power to give life unto the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak, and cause that as many as would not worship the image of the beast should be killed. And he causeth all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and bond, to receive a mark in their right hand or in their foreheads, and that no man might buy or sell, save he that had the mark, or the name of the beast, or the number of his name." So we first saw the beast of the sea, which is the man of sin, the Antichrist, who is worshipped by all that dwell on the earth, whose names are not in the book of life. But now there's another beast, the beast of the earth, the false prophet. He's a prophet or spokesperson for the first beast, the man of sin, and he points to the man of sin and says, it says that he causeth the earth and them which dwell therein to worship the first beast, who had whose deadly wound was healed. And it gives the detail that he spoke as a dragon, but he had two horns like a lamb. So he's wearing sheep's clothing. He comes appearing like a prophet and acting like a sheep, like a true follower of God. But inwardly, not only is he a ravening wolf, but he speaks the words of the dragon. Now, again, we know from Revelation 12 that the dragon is Satan. So the words that he speaks are literally of the devil, despite coming before men appearing as a lamb. And we can see how this can play out even in the modern day. The words that he speaks are demonic. They are of Satan. And according to verse 12, causes those that dwell on the earth to worship the beast that ascended out of the bottomless pit. This shows that the false prophet is very influential, that he might have already had some sort of religious background, that he might already be respected in some way by a lot of Christians and different religions that exist today. Jesus said, "Woe unto you when all men shall speak well of you, for so did their fathers unto the false prophets." I think that's in Luke 6. One of the signs of a false prophet is that everybody loves them. There's people out there who claim to speak for God, and yet you have people from other religions who are opposed to Christianity praising them and being friendly towards them. For example, the Pope. The Pope is respected not only by over a billion Catholics, but also a lot of Muslim leaders, a lot of Buddhist leaders like the Dalai Lama, a lot of Hindu gurus and Hindu ascetics and leaders, and even some ecumenical evangelical Christians who don't consider themselves Catholics, but they still think that the Pope is a Christian. And I can see the false prophet being a Pope of some sort. We don't exactly know, because we don't know exactly when this is going to take place. We don't know the future, of course. We don't know what the false prophet is, but to me it makes sense that it could be a future bishop of Rome. And we see a joining together of religions right now already, with the Roman Catholic Pope at the head of a lot of that. We see meetings where the Pope, the Dalai Lama, different Jewish rabbis, Hindu monks, Muslim imams, etc., they meet together for creating world peace and for agreeing on different issues that are going on in the world. And because the Antichrist is revealed in the midst of a crisis of the first part of the 70th week, since there's a period of 7 years, it's split in half. The midpoint, the midst of the seventh week, is when the abomination desolation takes place and the Antichrist is revealed. But there's a first part of that 70th week. before the Abomination of Desolation, where there's a crisis of a worldwide war and a famine, pestilence, etc., with the first few seals in Revelation chapter 6. And after that, out of that crisis that's going on around the world, it says concerning the second seal that peace was taken from the earth. So that doesn't sound like it's a very agreeable time. I mean, I guess you could call that World War III. And at this point is when the false prophet will point to the Antichrist as a solution for these problems. And it's not surprising that the world will accept him, because there's also already a multitude of religions which teach this strange demonic doctrine, which is different from the God of the Bible. Now, we believe in one God who is three separate persons, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. Jesus Christ, the Son, he's one of these three persons, and he will appear in the clouds to rapture his saints. That's what we believe about God. And Judaism, however, they don't believe that Christ has come yet. They're waiting a future Messiah. And not only that, but they believe in the oneness of God. They believe that God is just one person, and it's just one, like, almost, there's some denominations of Judaism which kind of teach a pantheistic view of who God is, this Kabbalistic mysticism. Then there's also the Hindus, who are waiting for the coming of Kalki, which is the 10th avatar of the god Vishnu, who comes on a white horse, just like the Antichrist in the first seal, where there's one on a white horse who is going out and conquering the world. How the Buddhists are awaiting the next Buddha called Maitreya. The Taoists, which is a Chinese religion, are looking for a figure which will come in the future called Li Hong. The Muslims believe in the coming of the Mahdi. The Shia Muslims in particular believe in the return of the 12th Imam. The Zoroastrians believe in a savior figure called Shaoxiant. Then there's also the religion of Babism, which is not really popular anymore. They believe in a figure called He Whom God Will Make Manifest. And those in the Baha'i faith, which grew out of Babism, they believe that that was fulfilled in a man named Baha'u'llah in the 1860s. But they also believe that there will be another future manifestation of God who will come in the future. So I don't think it's far-fetched to see how the false prophet would use the doctrine of oneness and the doctrine of the Baha'is to establish the beast and as the manifestation of God. It's just that there's one God, but he's just a new manifestation, because that's, in essence, what a lot of religions are teaching today, that the different figures in the past are just manifestations of God. That's a thing which a lot of religions that I just mentioned hold on to, the belief that God is one, not just that there's one God, but that he's just one person or one like pantheistic universal force that just pervades the universe or whatever, that's just everything is God or God is everywhere or something like that. You know, they just believe in one, they don't believe in a personal God, but just some impersonal universal God or whatever. They believe that he's some kind of impersonal force, that he's manifested himself in different ways in the past. There are a lot of religions that teach that. Hinduism, for example, is a very complex religion with a lot of different philosophies and ideas about who God is. Usually when we just look at Hinduism, it's just like, oh, they're polytheists. But in reality, one of the most prominent of the Hindu philosophies is the idea that there's only one God called Brahman, which manifests itself as different gods in different ways throughout history. A lot of Hindus, even though they believe in different gods, they don't really. They just believe in one God, and that the different gods are just manifestations of that one God. So the Baha'i faith, going back to that, they believe that multiple prophets, messiahs, and gods of the past are all manifestations of the same God. And likewise, modalism, which is a doctrine that is creeping into Christianity, it's an ancient heresy, but there's a lot of churches which are teaching it today for some reason. And I think it's towards the move towards a one world religion and the Antichrist. They teach oneness. There's actually a denomination called Oneness Pentecostalism. I think it has like 20 or 30 million members, which is basically the same thing as Pentecostalism. The only difference is that they believe in a hardcore work salvation, and they believe that Jesus is the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. They believe that God is just one person instead of three persons. And since they teach that there's only one person, the Godhead, they teach that the Son, the Holy Ghost, and the Father are all manifestations of just one person called Jesus. They don't distinguish between the Son and the Father. I believe that the Antichrist religion will be represented by an adherence to this oneness doctrine, that one day when the man of sin sits upon his throne, the false prophet will say that he's just a final manifestation of God, that he's the fulfillment of all these prophecies of these different religions, because pretty much every religion believes in a coming new figure who's going to establish peace on the earth. And it's different from the return of Jesus Christ. We know from the book of Revelation that there will be an Antichrist before then. A lot of religions just believe that there's just going to be some figure that will just appear and cause world peace or whatever, or turn people to the worship of the true God, something like that. So that's what a lot of the major religious leaders and politicians of this day are saying. They say we all worship the same God, no matter what religion you teach. You hear people get in front of the United Nations and say that. You hear people say that on the media. They say it's just all the same. God's just revealed himself in different ways. And that is basically the satanic doctrine of modalism, that God's just one person. He just reveals himself as different persons, as different modes, as different manifestations. And therefore, it will make sense that the people on the earth of all kinds of different religions and backgrounds will follow after the beast and worship him as God. Now, back in Revelation 13, it tells us that the false prophet will do false miracles in order to point people to the beast as well, and will command them to make an image of the beast, basically an idol. So after the whole world, besides the Christians, is already bowing down to the beast and worshiping him, they all believe that he's God on earth. Now they're making an idol to him. Now, it doesn't tell us what the idol looks like or how big it is or anything like that, but personally, I believe that the idol is alike to the image of that Nebuchadnezzar saw in his dream in Daniel chapter 2. And the reason why is because that chapter identifies the idol as representing the kingdom of Babylon and those empires which would follow. Well, here in Revelation 13, interestingly, it describes the beast of having the qualities of all the different kingdoms shown in Daniel 7. I already talked about that, the leopard, the bear, and the lion. Therefore, I think it makes sense that this idol might be one of gold, silver, bronze, and iron. I don't know. Again, we'll see that in the future. But besides that, it tells us that he causes the image of the beast to speak. Now, how that takes place is unclear. It says he gave the beast life, but it's, again, unclear whether that means the image was literally alive, that this thing made out of wood or iron or whatever it's made out of actually becomes alive, or which is probably unlikely because Satan is a deceiver. To me, it just seems like this is just what John's description is of what he saw, that it'll appear like it's alive, and the false prophet will say, look, I made it alive. But with the technology that we have today, we can see how something like that would happen. Perhaps it's like artificial intelligence or something of that nature, that this image is made in some way to appear that it's literally alive, when in reality it's some kind of supercomputer or AI or something like that. So those who do not bow down to this idol will be killed. So not only is this religion one worshiping the beast himself, but also the image representing the beast. And then it says that the whole world took the mark that the false prophet put in place, and that those without the mark could not buy nor sell. Now, again, this is further speculation about what the mark of the beast is, but as many have proposed this, because there's a lot of people out there who will say this, and I agree with them now. In the past, I didn't really see how this was the case, but really, as we get towards that time, it makes perfect sense to me that perhaps this mark of the beast is some kind of microchip. Because again, we've already seen the technology like that develop where something can be implanted into our hand and cause us to just scan our hands to purchase things. In that case, it would make sense that nobody would be able to buy or sell who didn't have the mark, since the society which implemented this would become cashless. Paper money would become worthless, and therefore the only way which you can actually purchase something is using this mark of the beast. You just scan your hand, and if you try to pay with paper money or whatever, that's all worthless. But since this is a chip implanted in the head or the forehead, it seems to me like it may be possible for the mark to be some kind of mind control device as well, that it makes the worshipers of the beast mindless slaves of the New World Order. Again, this is just speculation. Perhaps that microchip could even be connected to the artificial intelligence system of the image of the beast. So considering the path that we're going down technologically, I don't think it's too much of a stretch to consider this end times religion some kind of a cyber religion where everything's connected by computers and surveillance. Because you sometimes have to wonder, how exactly is it that the beast subjugates the whole world? How is it that everybody besides the Christians will know about this beast and will be deceived by this beast? Because the beast declares himself as God. The false prophet comes along. He points to him as Christ. He deceives the world into taking the mark. He does all these great miracles to make people believe that he is the manifestation of God. They're already convinced at this point that the beast is a new manifestation of God. And now, out of fear and marveling towards this man, they take the mark. Now, I want to turn to another passage which sheds some light on this subject as well, and that's in Daniel chapter 11. In Daniel chapter 11, verse 31, I want to establish what we're talking about in this chapter before moving on to some later verses in this chapter. So it says in verse 31, "An arm shall stand on this part, and they shall pollute the sanctuary of strength, and shall take away the daily sacrifice, and they shall place the abomination that maketh desolate." Here it mentions the abomination of desolation, showing us that the passage we are about to read concerns the beast that sets up the abomination of desolation and starts the great tribulation, according to Jesus in Matthew 24. Now, notice the similarity of the descriptions given of the beast in Revelation 13 and this man in Daniel 11 when I read this chapter. So verse 36 to verse 45, it says, "The king shall do according to his will, and he shall exalt himself and magnify himself above every god, and shall speak marvelous things against the God of gods, and shall prosper till the indignation be accomplished, for that is determined shall be done. Neither shall he regard the God of his fathers, nor the desire of women, nor regard any god, for he shall magnify himself above all. But in his estate shall he honor the God of forces, and a God whom his fathers knew not shall he honor with gold and silver and with precious stones and pleasant things. Thus shall he do in the most strongholds with a strange god, whom he shall acknowledge and increase with glory, and he shall cause them to rule over many, and shall divide the land for gain. And at the time of the end shall the king of the south push at him, and the king of the north shall come against him like a whirlwind, with chariots and with horsemen and with many ships. He shall enter into the countries and shall overflow and pass over. He shall enter also into the glorious land, and many countries shall be overthrown. But these shall escape out of his hand, even Edom and Moab, and the chief of the children of Ammon. He shall stretch forth his hand upon the countries, and the land of Egypt shall not escape. But he shall have power over the treasures of gold and of silver, and over all the precious things of Egypt. And the Libyans and the Ethiopians shall be at his steps. But tidings out of the east and out of the north shall trouble him. Therefore he shall go forth with great fury to destroy, and utterly to make away many. And he shall plant the tabernacles of his palace between the seas and the glorious holy mountain. Yet he shall come to his end, and none shall help him." Now, I want to go into the next chapter. That's the end of Daniel 11, but if you continue reading it in Daniel 12, it says, "And at that time shall Michael stand up, the great prince which standeth for the children of thy people, and there shall be a time of trouble such as never was since there was a nation, even at that same time. And at that time thy people shall be delivered, every one that shall be found written in the book. And many of them that sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake, come to everlasting life, and some to shame and everlasting contempt." So in case you're wondering about what time we're talking about here when we read Daniel 11, where it says at the time of the end, it establishes in the beginning of Daniel 12 that this is the time when first there's a standing up of Michael, then a great trouble, and then the resurrection. Just like we see in Revelation, Michael fights against the dragon, then there's great tribulation, and then there's the resurrection. So in Daniel chapter 12, verse 1, when it says at that time, what time are we referring to? The time of the end that's mentioned in verse 40 of the last chapter. Because remember, these chapter divisions are modern. When the book of Daniel was written, there was no division between chapter 11 and chapter 12. They're telling the same story. It's the same passage. So I'm going to make a video later at some point, probably later this month, talking about my interpretation of the identity of the Antichrist. But at this point, I just want to say, I believe that Daniel 11, for the most part, has already been fulfilled in part. Some people make the mistake of believing that there's only just one king of the north and one king of the south, despite the passage constantly talking about the deaths of these kings and being replaced by other kings. And at the beginning of the chapter, it specifically says that this is right after the Persian Empire and the Greek Empire comes into power. So the king of the north and the king of the south, those are just positions. It's not a single king. It's like we say the president of the United States. We're not only talking about Donald Trump when we say that, but the office of the president of the United States. However, the Antichrist is that final king who at the time of the end will conquer the world. Notice what it says about him in Daniel chapter 11. In verse 36, it says, "He shall exalt himself and magnify himself above every god, and shall speak marvelous things against the God of gods." Isn't that what we saw in Revelation 13, that the beast not only is worshipped by the whole world, but he spoke blasphemies against God? Now consider the following passage, which uses very similar language to what is said in Daniel 11. 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 34 says, "Let no man deceive you by any means, for that day shall not come, except there come a falling away first, and that man of sin be revealed, the son of perdition, who opposeth and exalteth himself above all that is called God, or that is worshipped, so that he is God, sitteth in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God." When the man of sin comes and abominates the temple, he sits down in the temple, he will declare himself as God. And not only will he declare himself as God, but he will lift himself above all that is called God or that is worship. So he's going to say that he's the supreme God. He's going to magnify himself, as it says in Daniel 11. But I also want to point out something interesting that it says in Daniel 11, verse 38. It says, "But in his estate, he shall honor the God of forces, and a God whom his fathers knew not shall he honor with gold and silver and with precious stones and pleasant things." Not only is the Antichrist going to honor himself and come in his own name, declaring himself as God, but he will also honor something called the God of forces. Now, what I believe that means, again, relates back to this end times movement towards a one world religion and the idea that all gods are the same. When I hear God of forces, I think of some Eastern pantheistic type of God, because force just means strength or the power to do something or have influence. So it goes back to that modalistic oneness type God, the idea that God is not personal, but just a force, just some kind of a thing that just pervades the universe, a pantheistic deity. So I interpret this as that after the beast sets himself down and declares himself as God, once he has the full power, once he's in his estate, he will honor the God of forces and thus declare himself to be a manifestation of God. And that's the reason why I believe that Satan will be worshipped, as it says in Revelation 13, that those who wander after the beast do not just worship the beast, but worship the dragon as well. If we go back to the 2 Thessalonians passage, we see the same thing that Revelation 13 teaches us, that the man of sin comes into power because of Satan. It says in verse 8 to 10 in 2 Thessalonians 2, "And then shall that wicked be revealed, whom the Lord shall consume with the spirit of his mouth, and shall destroy with the brightness of his coming. Even him whose coming is after the working of Satan with all power and signs and lying wonders, and with all deceivableness of unrighteousness in them that perish, because they receive not the love of the truth, that they might be saved." Of course, Satan has always created counterfeit religions throughout history. We read in 2 Corinthians chapter 11 that Satan is transformed into an angel of light. And I believe that certain angelic figures, which have appeared to so-called prophets of the past, like Muhammad or Joseph Smith, were in fact Satan disguising himself as an angel, that those were not true angels of God, but Satan coming to them to establish these false religions. However, those religions never had the power to deceive the whole world. But this final end times religion unites the world in the worship of the Antichrist, and thus brings people to esteem the devil and not the true God, the Lord. So in conclusion, we don't really exactly know the extent of this religion and what it will be like, except for that it is satanic. And we see the move towards this wickedness today. Now, I could also possibly talk about the possible Gnostic influence on the end times religion, as well as the Hebrew roots side as well, since there are a lot of Hebrew roots teachers out there, like Daniel John Lee and whatever the guy is that's in charge of Nazarene Israel Ministries. I think his name is Norman something. They teach modalism, that Jesus is just a manifestation of a single person called God and not a separate person from the Father. And that doctrine ultimately comes from Gnosticism, one of the oldest heresies in Christianity that was opposed to Christianity in its early days in the first and second centuries. And we see a surprising resurgence of that in this last day, of people who believe that the material world is evil and that the God of the Old Testament, which created the world, is not the true God, which I've heard a lot of people who claim to believe the Bible, they say that today, and they just accept the New Testament. They reject the Old Testament. They think that the God of the Old Testament is different, which doesn't make any sense. But just from Scripture and what it tells us about the religion of the Antichrist, this one world religion, the beast is going to declare himself as God and will be the primary object of worship, although there will also be an image made to the beast, and he will honor a god of forces. People will worship these three, and it won't just be a small sect or a cult either. This isn't just like some new minor religious movement. This is the entire world with the exception of Christians. Now, considering that this is after the first half of the week when there's a great world war and pestilence, the world population would be significantly reduced. But just as an estimate, I'd still see there being several billion non-Christians upon the earth, 2 or 3 billion people worshiping this Antichrist, the largest religion ever created. So that's the head, that's the way that we're heading right now. And it's very unfortunate, but it will take place. And of course, if you read the book of Revelation, the saints who are in heaven are constantly rejoicing when God pours out his wrath upon the earth, because even though they will persecute believers, even though they will, those who take the mark of the beast will eventually go to hell, the Bible does teach us that God will pour out his wrath upon the earth. And I'm going to make a video on that as well sometime in the near future about the wrath of God in the book of Revelation. So that's it for today. Just some comments here. They will be trying to put a chip in us to try to track our whereabouts. That makes sense. Paperless society. If you ever listen to Dr. Rashid Buttar, he's saying the vaccine will make us worse or kill us. Cuomo said God didn't do it. Cuomo, the social distance law. Yeah, I heard that. The governor of New York or the mayor of New York, whatever he is, Andrew Cuomo, got on a live television. He was mocking God. So that's what this guy's talking about here. Anyway, thank you, buddy, for watching. God bless you and goodbye.